Blog Talk Radio.
Grateful to bring forth another edition of One Black Man Talk. I'm soon to be joined by two cats, speaking of Mr. D. Maurice and one Mr. Charles. I'm Mark Elliott. As you know by now, ready to do another episode of When Black Men Talk, a evocative conversation that will give our perspective on love, life, and relationships, basically dig into a sincere self-evaluation. And I promise you this, we're going to say some things that need to be spoken. You know, from time to time, we need to kind of just check up with some folks and see how they're doing. And I'm going to start with Mr. DeMaurice, because a phrase that's tossed around quite a bit, and it's a good phrase, and it's a good thing, is mental health. And over the years, we are paying more and more attention to it, and I think we should. I think sometimes we should pay even more attention to it. With that being said, Mr. DeMaurice, man, I'm going to roll it to you, my brother. And when I roll it to you, I want to know how you're feeling, man. I don't want to know basically on the surface how you're feeling, man. I want to know what's grinding, if something's grinding underneath the surface, what's going on with you, bro. Here's our mental checkup. How you feeling, boss?
You know, I appreciate that, man. I'm feeling good, man, and I love the weekends. After Saturday, after about 3 or 4 o'clock p.m., I start to check out. And the reason why I do that, because I'm ripping and running throughout the week, and you need to replenish, you need to recharge. And usually these are my 2 days, if I don't have anything pressing, that I use to do that. Try not to, even though I do a lot of work at home. If it's work, I try not to bring it at home unless I got to do something and some deadlines are coming up. But, yeah, man, I've just been for the last few hours and for more hours after the show. Actually, the show has not worked for me. It allows me to recharge. It allows me to talk to my favorite people in the whole wide world. And we get together and we chop it up. It makes me laugh. It makes me cry. It makes me think about things. And it gets me... it gives me the energy I need to keep pushing forward. So thank you. I'm doing well, just recharging this weekend, and getting ready for the battle next week.
Happy to hear it, my brother. I'm happy to know that, you know, between us, you know, us three, that we're not afraid to be transparent, to be clear, to basically if there's something kind of really grinding, that we're kind of bring it out. And know that, you know, among us three, and in general, that we'd have to be afraid. Mr. Charles, want to get you on this, man. Here again, how you feeling? You know, just not a basic, you know, sometimes we pass each other and how you feeling? Yeah, you know, we keep it moving. This is a deeper one. You know, this is how we always want to do it from this point forward. A deeper, how you feeling, brother? So something that's grinding that underneath the surface, hey, man, let it roll. But we truly want to know. How you feeling, sir?
If you'd asked me this about 5 months ago, I might have gave you a different answer. Well, let me tell you, man, I am awesome, bro. God is so good. You know, the thing that I love about sometimes, like DeMaurice mentioned, on certain days when you don't feel pressed, you're supposed to be resting, and you wake up in the morning, and the simplest of thoughts come across your mind. And it doesn't have to be anything major, but you just think back to things that are in front of you and around you and the people that are around you, and you really realize how blessed you are, man. You know, considering what you've overcome and where you're at, where you're in a good place and you feel great. So, yeah, man, I'm in a great place because I'm involved in a lot of things that I didn't see coming. And that's a blessing, bro. When I have no idea, I let you know I'm not by myself, and I know who I'm supposed to give the credit to. So, yeah, man, I'm in a very solid, good place. And like DeMaurice said, it's nothing like having great people in your circle. And in your corner, even some people you want to kind of slap inside the head once in a while, Mark. Anyway, but they still all love you. It's just like family, man. It's like family. It's like family, man. So, yeah, no, it's all love.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. I thank you, too, for basically, you know, being transparent. And things are good in a sense, too. Like you, Mr. Charles, some things are popping up, man, that I didn't even see coming down the track, and I'm happy and I'm grateful for. But I think we all need to take time in our circle and maybe even out of our circle and check on folks, make sure they're good. And if they're not, if you could do something to brighten their day and brighten their smile or help them out in the situation, let's not be afraid or reluctant to do so. Gentlemen, some things have been popping off in the past year or so, and we want to always take time to salute people that are doing big things and accomplishing big things and moving forth in a big way. And I want to salute this lady here. I want to salute Ketanji Brown Jackson. She's the first sister to be nominated to the Supreme Court, and we wish her well. And I want to get your reaction on this, because to me, this kind of came out, and it just kind of like, you know, and kind of moved on. But I want to get your reaction. I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles, when you noticed that it was talked for a little while that Biden was going to do such. But now that he's basically put a name and a face with the person that he's picking to go to the Supreme Court, and again, she's going to be the first sister that basically gets nominated and probably will be confirmed to the Supreme Court. I want to get your reaction, sir.
Initially, when I first heard it, I was excited. I was happy. But then I pulled back, and I was like, I wanted to reserve my emotions, because this country has shown us from time to time when we get excited about things, they can pull stuff back. It's like Lucy, I told y'all about Lucy and Charlie Brown pulling that football, bro. Certain times you just know when you walk up there, they're going to pull it out from under you. I think this is a great thing. I think she will be confirmed. I hope she is, but I know how hard it's going to be for her to get through the process. So I'm elated. I'm excited. But I'm still now kind of a little bit more leery until she's actually confirmed.
Mr. DeMaurice, you know, we'll get your reaction to this, because it's not often that someone that looks like us, that come from our ancestors, get nominated to the Supreme Court. Your feelings, sir?
I'm really encouraged, and I'm glad that President Biden has, you know, say what you want about him. You know, I don't agree with everything he does or says or all that other stuff, but he always kind of tries to stick to his promises, and he realizes that black women have been the cornerstone. Not to say that black people haven't voted Democratic for a long time, but he knows how black women have organized, and he got him in office, and he was like, you know what, I'm going to get a black vice president, and I'm going to get a black Supreme Court justice. And so I'm anxiously waiting to see, and hopefully she gets in. She seems more than qualified to get in. And that's what I've been looking at for the most part. Can she get in, and can she help not only our people, but help this country in some of the most pivotal decisions that have to be made in the courts? And so I'm looking forward to knowing a lot more about her. I'm looking forward to the hearings so that she can showcase her skills and why she's qualified for this position.
Mr. Charles kind of touched on this a little bit when he was saying he was excited and he kind of pulled back. And this might be the answer to this upcoming question I'm going to put out there to Mr. DeMaurice. It seems like to me, for black America, we've got to the point where this is no big deal. I remember there was a time when, let's just go back years ago, and I'm not trying to put this on the same level of this, but I'm sure I wasn't living at the time, neither one of us were, but I'm sure when Jackie Robinson, you know, was the first one to swing a baseball in Major League Baseball, you know, we took notice. I'm sure as people, we took notice. We were probably by our radios. We, you know, it was a certain sense of pride we probably carried. We were elated. We were happy. It seems like something like this, when this happened, it didn't seem like it was a big deal or a deal at all for black America. Do you kind of feel that way, Mr. DeMaurice, or do you see that?
I do see that. I do see that. And I think that we're so distracted in so many other things in this society. You got the social media. You got all these things that are popping off, entertainment industry, movies, things of that sort. It kind of keeps us unfocused on what we need to really be focused on. And it bothers me a lot, because the important things come up and we kind of sneeze at it, but something that's not even important and not going to even move the radar for you. People, you know, have a lot of thoughts and chime in with different views. I'll give you a perfect example. This is very important with the Supreme Court nomination. But what you see on social media and what you see people black talking about most of the time is Kanye West and Kim Kardashian. What does that have to do how is that going to help us get further, and how is that going to help us in our day-to-day? And you see more attention to that. So that's what I mean by we're distracted by so many things that are not important that it seems like the important things just go by the wayside, and it's a shame that it does.
I think underneath that, and this is just my personal reaction to what you're saying, I think our generation, part of our generation that lies behind us, we had to fight for nothing. We didn't have to fight for anything. We've been given too much, bro. And the people in front of us fought. They knew what, how to go out there, fight and strive. So anytime any one of us will succeed in something, we were happy for them. These folks now, you know, they're born into a world where they can't wait to wear the next Nike. They can't wait to, you know, basically see what an idiot as Kanye West is doing and paying attention to him. And that's, to me, what it is. Until something happens in their world that reminds them that you're black, they don't think about it. Mr. Charles, again, it seems like, you know, this happened. And for a lot of us, for black America, it's no big deal. What's up with that?
Yeah, I kind of concur about what you said a few minutes ago. Because I think back in the day, you think about Jackie Robinson, what was going on, and how people was really fighting for equal rights in a number of ways, and we were not included. And you think about baseball with the Negro Leagues, perhaps had some of the greatest talent ever in baseball, but it was never seen by the majority, by the majors, the true society. They had their own little clique, but still Major League Baseball was doing their thing, and Negro League Baseball was really still shining. But here, it's like there's no, I guess, I'm trying to see if I can use the right words. There's what I would call a united struggle, bro. So if we're all suffering and we're trying to get by and hopefully things get better for us, and no matter what, we're all in that point where we really just feel like it's just really difficult to exist and move forward, as you mentioned, there's no united struggle. The most struggle you may have is if somebody's doing well and they're making money and taking care of their children. Every once in a while, they might run into something, but more than likely, some people of color, they got a couple dollars in their pocket, they driving a car, whatever they're doing, and social media stuff. Back in the day, there was a struggle, bro. It didn't even matter. You had cats like that had money that was supposed to be our creme de la creme, our elite, the Bill Russells and the Jackie Robinsons of the other world, still being forced to go to the back of buses, or even to the point where, more importantly, they were not able to dine in certain restaurants because of the color of their skin, even though they were high-quality athletes. So my point of all that being said, as I said before, I don't think there's a united struggle, so therefore we just kind of let things bypass us because there's no sense of urgency. It don't matter because it don't affect me.
I'm going to come back to you with this one, Mr. Charles, because to me, this is like an undercurrent of not being excited about this as well. Because when you look at the nominee, she doesn't look like something or someone you're going to probably run across on Facebook and, you know, Instagram or that nature. And, you know, she's a graduate of Harvard. And it almost seems to me, I ain't going to say almost, take the word almost out. A lot of times when there's something of education and it's something that education has brought forth, as a race of people, we're not interested in it. Your reaction?
Sometimes I say that, but I think there's some other people that really understand the importance of the education part. To me, it really comes back to what you just said, that you have a different generation that is excited by different things. They're excited by the bling and the VIP area and what do you have and what do you wear today. I mean, really to a point where it's almost sickening and sad. You're judged on how successful you are based on, you know, your merit or how you look or whatever. If enough people like you, then, oh, you can be rich now. But getting back to the point of the education, it's almost to the point where we forget we're looking for certain parameters of what it means to even be black, man. We come in all different shades, all different colors, and we do great things. And we've been doing it for such a long time. But the moral majority of our people, especially the young people, have turned to that idea of everybody wants to be famous, everybody wants to be VIP. So the important things in matters like this, or even with education, is outside the door. Because instead of me now worrying about going to education and going at the, or getting a good job by working and learning a trade or a skill, all I do is get on TikTok and shake my booty or do something stupid, and I can live that way for the rest of my life. That's the way we live now.
These two gentlemen have basically put themselves college and earned some letters, Mr. DeMaurice and Mr. Charles. So I feel good in asking them this question and coming to you, Mr. DeMaurice. You know, education, does it seem like something that, you know, plays a part, and do we value the gratitude of it?
I think for some people, yes. I had the opportunity Friday to go out and help recruit different African-American students from a high school on the south side of Chicago. And I met four young ladies who, dynamic young ladies, and who, you know, you could see the brightness in their eyes about the next step. They're finishing up high school. Four of them want to go into biology, and one wants to go into business and things of that sort. And so, you know, we're sitting there talking, and I'm sharing experiences of when I went to school and experiences of the school and all that other stuff. And so what surprised me of recruiting is that there were no young men there. So our black women, our young women are looking at education is a key for them to get out of the situation they are. And these young ladies weren't, you know, in the middle class, you know, they're struggling with family issues and things of that sort, but they need that support. And I'm looking for the young men. And so I don't think it's pushed as much as it was back in the day when we were coming up, because I was having this conversation with my dad last night about, you know, some of the stuff that I shared with you guys on the show about how I was going to quit school. And I was talking to mom about it all the time. Like I was going to take my chances and doing what I had to do to make money, whatever, you know, whatever came. And me and him started the conversation about how life kind of is kind of funny, and how it changes, and decisions you make kind of lay out things for you in the future. And me and Mr. Charles were talking about this the other night after we finished the show about, you know, doing it for our parents, because that first degree that I got was not for me. And I told him that last night. He has my degree. And I was, you know, really kind of going in detail why I did that. I said, because I wanted to quit school and I didn't want to do this. But from the day one, and I always remember, my dad said, you're going to college. You're not going to the armed forces. You're not going to the army like I did. You know, forget about what your cousins are doing and all that other stuff, and get away from all the distractions. Your best chance is to go to school. And so while I was there, and there were times I wanted to quit. There were times I wanted to walk away. There were times when I felt like I did not belong there. You know, I'm like, what am I doing in college here? And as I kept going on and kept getting encouragement and kept meeting people who, you know, were on that positive tip that wanted to make things of themselves, you start seeing the possibilities of what you can be. And that's what I started doing. And even though I was doing it for my parents, and when I walked up that stage, I took a good look at my diploma, and I just handed it to them. I was like, this is yours. And we were talking about that last night, and he's like, yeah, I remember you doing that. And like, you know, and he was asking me, you sure you want to give this up? You worked hard for this. I'm like, it wasn't for me. I wasn't working hard for me. I was working hard because this is something that you put in my head to do, and I made a promise that I was going to do. I made a commitment. So what you see now with younger people is that you got to help them find the commitment and passion to go forward. And even if, I think every college is not for everybody. University life is not for everybody, but everybody should have an opportunity to try to see whether or not they can do it, and how it opens up your mind and expands you to think of other possibilities of where your life can be and what you can do. I don't think we, in the society now, we push that with the younger people. I know certain cultures do. I know certain, facets of society do with their children, because they know, but everybody can't be an entrepreneur. You hear the entrepreneur saying college is a waste of time. That's the wrong message you're sending, because everybody can't be an entrepreneur and be a multi-billionaire or millionaire. It's not in the cards for everybody. But at least it gives you that foundation, whether you go to trade school, whether you go to college, gives you a foundation where you can start off and you can do something with your life. So, but I just don't see it as much. And I volunteered to go out there to recruit because I wanted to talk to the younger people and not only getting them to the school, but finding out what they thought about and what kind of things that they need and resources and emotional support to do this. Because I remember, I always go back to where I went to school and what I needed to keep me in school. But I don't think these young people are getting that now. And they need that more than ever on the basis of what's happening in society right now. They need it more than ever.
Do me a favor, man. When you get a chance, next time you talk to your pops and you two talk kind of regularly, and that's awesome, man, you have your father available to talk to. But, you know, I've been in contact someone with your pops trying to get him on the show and tell him I said, you know, he's been kind of avoiding me a little bit. Don't
yeah,
make me
we talked
come
about
knock
that
on
last
front.
Night.
Tell him I said.
We talked about
send
this
to him personally.
So,
tell him I said, don't make me come knock on his front door. I'm going to knock kind of hard.
The conversation started out with your name. He said, Mark's been asking me to get on the show, and he said, I thought about a situation that we was in and why he left Connecticut. And that's how the conversation started. So he's been thinking about it. Hit him up. He's ready.
Cool.
I think he's ready.
Cool. All right. I will come down there.
And he'll be waiting for you, too.
Black woman, VP, Kamala Harris, and Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson are both married to white men. Now, interesting. This is real, real interesting that they want to kind of start this right at this right here. And I'll come back. I'll go to you, Mr. Charles, with this one. Tell me what this one is. Sir, since you wanted to knock me up against the head, I haven't heard an outcry from black women about these two having husbands that are not black. Is there a particular reason that you can think of, Mr. Charles, why they're so quiet about this?
Well, I think it's a lot more acceptable now for that to happen, just in general. And, you know, you might hear that back somewhere in some back end of the closet of the hair salon. Girl, you see that man? Mm-hmm. Something to that effect. But, I just don't think it's such a serious issue for a lot of people anymore. It perhaps used to be, and it's like, well, it would be nice. Or maybe she just couldn't find a good one or something to that effect. But I don't think a lot of people really are focus on that anymore because it used to be a thing, I mean, a major thing, but now it's kind of like maybe the main thing for a lot of people is to look and do an eye roll and then they just keep it pushing.
Okay. Mr. DeMaurice, you know, man, been quiet. Sisters aren't saying anything. Usually they lead the conversation around this most of the time, but they have been relatively silent. You know, why is that, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this all day. I know where you're going with this. And
I ain't going nowhere, man. I'm not going nowhere.
Yeah. I know you for a long time. So one thing that I'll start off by this. I wish we can get past this because when you mentioned that, in the notes, I was like, you know, I really haven't thought about it. All I've been looking at is how her placement can help this country and help us as a people. And so that's what I've been focused on. And I know Mr. Charles said, you know, we've kind of it used to be something that you always kind of harp on, especially when black men date outside their race. You know, you hear a chorus of black women, you know, kind of fighting back against that. But, you know, if you want me to go into that, I will go into that. You know, I'll say this, and then if you want me to tie that back in, you got to start looking at yourself and why this is happening, because nobody owns anybody. So it's like, our men, so what are you doing to keep your, you know, our men? But I kind of looked at it as a way of, you know, probably some of the women, African women who were saying, you know what, that's right. You know, she had to do what she had to do. And ain't no, you know, men, you know, checking from her. But I think when you see people in high-ranking positions like that, you don't see a lot of us in those high-ranking positions, and you're rubbing elbows with people, and then you're around certain people, and then you fall in love with who you fall in love with. And I'm a proponent of that. You know, I don't look at, you know, skin color when I'm dating. And I've dated African women, women of all. I there's not too many women that are still are marked on my checklist of different cultures that I've dated. So, and that comes from my dad, you know, because he, you know, would always say, you know, be open to everybody. And that was a lesson that I had from my grandmother too, because this is the only time, I think I mentioned on the show, it's the only time I stumped grandma, because every time you ask a question, you're going back and forth with her, she always stumped you. And so I was dating a Puerto Rican young lady at the time in my neighborhood, and grandma would see me on the porch, and, you know, she would come in and sit down, we'd watch TV and all that stuff. And grandma made mention one day, we were talking, and she was like, I think you should kind of date your own kind. And I said, Grandma, you know, let's look at the Bible. And does the Bible say that? And so the way you say the Bible says, like, everybody is equal. So why am I discriminating and saying that, you know, I'm going to date just this particular, you know, kind of person? And grandma kind of looked up in the air. She kind of, you know how she does. She leaned back in her wheelchair. She folded her hands across her belly. And then she rolled off. And I'm like, wow. I'm on the paper. I felt like, and Charles uses this all the time, I felt like I just took the pebble out of the hand in Kung Fu. I felt that way. I felt like I just took the pebble out of the hand. I'm like, oh, man, you know, am I going to have to leave the house now because I stumped her and all this other stuff? But, you know, that showed me that she was like, that I lived a different experience than she lived. She did it out of safety, because she was worried about, when I thought about it, she was worried about my safety. Like, you're going into different territories that you don't know these people, and maybe it'll get you, you know, fouled up. But I was looking at it in my generation, Grandma, this is what we do. We're you know, around these folks. We're learning more about these folks. And this is the world I live in that's much more diverse than your world. And so so I think when I looked at that, I know we're not getting an outcry from the sister corner or the beauty parlor population, but I think sometimes it's more accepted. Sometimes they'll feel like, okay, since they're doing it, we could do it too, and, you know, we're getting one back, and maybe it's a game to certain folks and they're keeping score. But I would like to look at it as that you find who you love. You're in certain circles that, you know, not too many of us in, and you're going to find love where it is. And she found it. And I'm not really concerned of who she's dating, who she sleeps with, who she married. My concern is, and maybe everybody else's concern should be, whether or not she could do the job.
Well put, gentlemen. Well put. But I can't help but think, partly because they don't view black women marrying a white man the same way they view a black man marrying a white woman. And I know times have changed, and I realize people have accepted it. Partly the reason why it's quiet is because they look at it as, in some cases, that she leveled up. She couldn't find one of us to be with, so she leveled up by putting herself with a white man. And they don't come at it as harshly in that sense of thinking of where, you know, he's this and that. And we've all heard it. You know, all three of us have dated outside of our race. But even prior to dating outside of our race, we all heard it. You know, you hear it all the time when there's a man, a black man with a white woman, he's disrespectful to his mama. His mama was black. he think he's better. You've heard so many things being said. But, and I will venture to come back to you, Mr. Reese. Your answer, your response, on point, bro, on point. And as you said, you figure I was going to kind of ask or go with this. But if Kamala was a man, Jaina, if she was a man, and the woman that they chose to have been married to for a long period of time, and take a wild guess, my brother, take a wild guess. You think it would be just as quiet as it was for those two?
No, and here's why. The original movie Birth of a Nation, where it talked about the animalistic nature of African men who want to get all your white women, it still is prevalent in this society that our size of our manhood, our manhood in general is very strong. It's a very strong presence. That's why they're trying to put us all in dresses and feminizing our characters in different movies and things of that sort, because the black male or the African male presence is so strong that they know that women are attracted to strength. They're attracted to men of power, and they want to die that down somehow. So, no, it's looked upon that way because they want to perpetuate the black men just going around raping and pillaging white women or women of different races. And that's how the Ku Klux Klan kind of got white males all excited about going around lynching and cutting off manhood of black men because of that fear that black men will just take all your women, and your women love these black men. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard women of different color saying, we love black men. You know, we may not say it in our culture, but we do, because it's something special about us. It's a strength about us. It's our presence that really make women feel protected and good. But I do see that it would be different in that, because that sense of that black male presence is still prevalent in society, just like in the Birth of a Nation, that once they get there, it's all over for the rest of us. So it is a different dynamic in that sense, I think.
Good stuff, Mr. Charles. Again, if it was, the roles were reversed, you make the vice president a man, you make the Supreme Court nominee a man, and he would stand across from Becky. And Becky's been his wife for a long period of time. But we still basically hear nothing, sir. And if we would, what would be behind it?
Oh, you definitely hear, oh, Lord. Oh, no. Oh, Lord. Lord. Oh, Lord. Lord. No, you hear. It's not funny, but it's real. Because, I mean, it's just to a point where I think just a lot of our sisters or our women, man, it just hurts them to the core, because they want that black love. And oftentimes it may not happen that way, but as Demarie said, you love who you love. I learned that from my dad as well. It's like, variety is the spice of life. And you should not, although I love my sisters, I do, I love them, because I think about that. I told Demarie this all the time. If you took the color wheel you spin it around, if you wanted to create the ultimate woman as far as complexion and everything, you could find her amongst our women, because our women come in all kind of shades and colors. But that's not life. Life is about who you need and who you want to be with. But I think the women in general, though, it just hurts them to their core, because some of them have been taught this sense of they should be with their own, they should create families with their own, and they've been receiving that way back when, as Demarie mentioned about, from some of our ancestors and some of our other older relatives, that's what they've been used to. So this has been ingrained in a lot of our sisters' minds, and it still hurts some of them to the core. Us, though, we as men, we go, I'm like, boy, you better quit tripping. You know what? If she's a little difficult to deal with, you really ought to keep moving.
Yep. There
somebody
you go.
Gonna make you
there
happy.
You go.
It's even a 100.
There you
I'm
go.
Just saying. You know what I'm saying? Why you gotta be,
Mr.
Why
Charles,
you messed up? You know,
you gotta
up
repeat
with all
that, my brother. Do me do me a favor, Mr. Charles. I'm sorry to interrupt you, my brother. Do me a favor. Please repeat that. We want to make sure we heard that loud and clear. Repeat that. I'm sorry. Just say that again. That's definitely worth saying a couple of times.
You respond. Because I was kind of got what I said. You repeat it.
No,
you like
what
that?
What you basically said is that, in essence, it's not about your color. In a sense, if it's not working, it's not happening, we're moving on.
Right.
And that gets lost in the translation, my brother. That's what happens a lot of times. It gets lost in translation because at the end of the day, you can be purple for the most part. But if you're dancing and bringing peace, someone is hanging out.
You gotta be happy.
They're spending time. They want to
be
around you.
I'm sorry, please continue.
I'm
just saying in general, you know, I always thought that you got to be happy, man. And I'm telling you, I love my sisters. There's nothing like a sister. I was like, oh, Lord, ooh, girl. Woo! Think about that the other day. But I love other women, too, because they all have unique characteristics. But at the end of the day, when you find your mate or the person that you want to have a relationship, I was always taught, and I learned some of this on my own, that I want to be happy, man. I want to be happy. I don't want to be dealing with always some drama, and I don't care what color you are, but I'm not, why am I going through some strife? I'm just some nookie, bro, some nook-nook. I get nook-nook all day. So why should I be happy to get some nook-nook? Anyway, I'm going to leave that to you. I'm going to get off this thing before I get a choke. Nook-nook.
No, it's there. It's clearly there because, again, that gets lost, my brother, is that you want to be happy. You deserve to be happy. You were born to be happy, I mean, realistically. And not only that you want to be happy, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, I'm just speaking for myself now, you don't mind making someone else happy. You two make each other happy together. But when someone is basically rocking the boat and turning the boat of peace, again, they could be purple, orange, red, whatever, you move on. And a lot of times, you move on, and if you move on to something that's of a different shade that understands that and brings that to you, that's where you get what you said earlier about the old Lord and all that. That's where all that comes out, and, you know, his mama was this, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that's where you find that. And I was going to, you know, put the question out, you know, does love see color? And you two, for the most part, you know, answer that without me even kind of asking because, I mean, love has nothing to do with color. And I'm not saying, you know, just, you know, whatever you want to date, whatever color, I'm not saying, but in general, love is not a color. Love is a feeling. Love is a spirit. It's something that touches your soul. And if someone outside of your shade touches your soul, what are you to do? What are you to do, realistically? What are you to do? If that person basically steps up and they touch, you know, that part of you, and they relate to that part of you, and it's that compatibility, that chemistry, what do you do? I mean, realistically, what do you do? That's the question. What do you do at that point? I'm not asking for an answer. I'm just putting it out there. Black man thought. Provocative conversation that will give our perspective on life, love, relationships, and who knows what else. This is what we do. We call it When Black Men Talk. Myself, Mark Elliott, Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice. It's always a sincere self-evaluation. We're about that. Of course, we're going to say some things that need to be said. And, you know, I try to make sure we don't shy away from some things that need to be said. With that being said, gentlemen, I want to move the needle just a little bit and go in a different direction. I want to talk about self-esteem and kind of replenishing our self-esteem. It's interesting. There's a song out now by Mary J. Blige. I'm not the biggest Mary J. Blige fan. I ain't going to lie to you. There's certain cuts she had in the past I could roll with. But overall, a lot of her stuff probably I would probably push to the side. But this one, to me, hit home. And I remember before I heard the song, I read it was coming out, Mary J. Blige, Gorgeous. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I listened to the song, and she's basically saying every day, and mainly more towards women, you need to look in the mirror and tell yourself, hello, gorgeous. I'm gorgeous. And to think what that can do to someone's self-esteem, you know, because we know we all may think, I know a lot of times we think men don't have low self-esteem. You may want to think twice. You know, men have a way of covering up their low self-esteem better than women. And that's the only difference. And I'm going to work on a show in the future where we basically talk and speak on the signs that will show you when a man is doing certain things or saying certain things. Yeah, it's low self-esteem. That it is, no matter how macho he may try to come across. But with that being said, Mr. Charles, I'm going to come back to you, sir. Feeding yourself good attributes to your mind, something you do often or something you might be reluctant to do, sir?
Wow, that's deep. Be more reason I had this conversation a while back. Oh, my God. This is hilarious. So for myself, I just kind of remind myself of all that I've been through and all I've overcome to the point if I ever doubt myself and thinking that something might be a struggle or I may not be comfortable with doing something, then I simply remind myself of where I came from. I remind myself of the little dude I was, the little boy, and my struggles. And then I just sometimes turn around and think back about where I've come from. And I do this on a regular basis because I'm telling myself that I'm not the same person that I was back then. And who I am today and what I've been through experience and whatnot, I'm just a different person. So I just remind myself. And then I also remind myself about the connection I have with the Lord, man. You get the hell in the handbasket, bro. What you said about, like, well, my boy, Tupac said in his in one of his songs, he said, what you sad for? He said, nigga, you black. I mean, that can put a smile on your face automatically. What you sad for? You a beautiful creature. You're an amazing individual. So why are you sad? So I think about small things like that to continue to remind myself about keeping my self-esteem up as well.
Good stuff, man. I like how you brought what really maintains for me, that strong mental confidence, you know, the faith, knowing where God has brought me from, basically realizing he never left me. You know, he kind of never walked away. And that itself keeps my mind. And if, like you said as well, going through some things that you've kind of been through, some things you've been through, you probably didn't see the end from the beginning, but knew the end was going to be great. Even when you started out, you knew at that time, it was going to be great. And building on that, time after time after time after time, you build, and it's a structure. And the mind basically opens up and expands and accept more and more. D. Maurice, question coming to you, sir. Mr. D. Maurice, I'm sorry. Feeding yourself the good attributes to your mind, something you tend to do often, or something sometimes you might be a little reluctant. And I say reluctant because sometimes we think reluctant because we don't want to overpower ourselves and giving ourselves the big head. But I think sometimes it's okay to give yourself a big head. But, you know, that's how I say reluctant. But the question for you, sir.
Yeah, I do a lot of praying and self-talk. And I know we talked about that a few weeks ago about talking to yourself, a lot of self-talk. And just hyping yourself up, like, you got this, you got this. It's like, you know, you've done this, you know, you prepare for this and all this other stuff. And in my mind, I think about this funny movie that I saw, Richard Pryor in Bustin' Loose, where it was a part where he's carrying these kids across country and the bus breaks down and he has to go out and get some help. And he's talking to himself, pimping through the woods, like, my name is Joe so-and-so and so. And he's, you know, walking with all his confidence, you know, talking to himself and getting himself all hyped up. And then the Ku Klux Klan comes behind him and he's like, oh, snap, you know, and how he got out of the situation. So when I do that, I think about that part where, you know, he's motivating himself to do what he needs to do. And I think in different aspects of my life, whether it's training, whether it's sports, whether it's, you know, handling like meetings or running certain things, it's that self-talk, it's that prayer. One of my best buddies gave me this prayer that I've been using ever since. And the prayer is to the Creator, you know, let me be part of your will so I don't get in your way. So just that line, I mean, I was like goosebumps all over me, because that's the way I kind of go into praying. Even though I'm going in the classroom, I'm praying, let them hear your words. Get me out of the way. If it's something that I'm in the way of, get me out the way. And what do you need them to learn, and what do you need them to hear? Put it on me, and I'll be the vessel to teach them what I need to teach. So I take it away from me, and I give it to the Most High. And I know through that, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be all right. If I give it to the Most High, then I ain't got to worry about it.
I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it's hard not to basically be fond of these two gentlemen. I mean, you hear it for yourself when they basically take upon something, the way they can evaluate it, where they can come back, where they can deliver and bring a question that may not be easy and take it, and when they're done with it, make you stand back and go, whoa. And that's what we do. That's what we do. Mr. DeMaurice, come right back to you. Accepting your shortcomings, but understanding they don't define you. Because sometimes we get in the habit of our mistakes, we relive them mentally. We kind of let them kind of play a carousel in our mind. But at the end of the day, their mistakes are for a reason to improve. So when I think about that, that's a way of kind of, again, replenishing your self-esteem, you know, understanding, you know, your shortcomings. But at the same time, you don't allow them to define you. Your reaction, sir?
I was just talking about this the other day. One of my Kung Fu brothers just came back from Tennessee, and we've been training. And I remember having this conversation before Christmas time with him. And he was like, man, it's something different when you come in the gym. And he said, you know, what's going through your mind when you come in the gym? And I said, well, him and my two seafoods, the head instructor and his wife were sitting there too. We were just having drinks and we just had dinner with the whole group. And I said, martial arts is very humbling to me, because one day you can come in and you're just kicking everybody's ass, you're doing everything right. And then the next day the level gets put up more and you go home humble. You go home frustrated. Like, man, what am I doing? Why am I taking this? What's going on? Should I even be doing this? You know, I'm wasting my time. And every time I talk to the head instructor about that, it's like, he's like, how are you feeling? Because he sees it on your face. And I said, a little frustrated. He says, good, because that's going to teach you how to be better. That's going to be on your mind. You're going to train harder. You're going to do better. And the next time this comes up, you're going to be better. And so I always ask my senior level folks, you know, when I'm sparring them or when I'm, you know, doing exercises with them or what we call chi sao, which is a sparring exercise, with just the hands, I always ask them after our session, 5, 10, 15 minute session, what do I need to work on? Because every time I step in that gym, my preparation is I want to be better than when I came in. I want to learn another skill. I want to be better from having this experience. And that's my motivation for going in there, because I know that I want to master this, and I'm in my mid-50s. So I ain't got a lot of time to waste. So how do I master this? So one day if I decide to teach it, I know exactly what folks need to learn, where they need to be, all this other stuff, and I can master this. So every time I step in that gym, I have an agenda on what I want to get better at, what I'm not good at, what I want to get better at to solidify my game so that I'm an expert at it. And I've taken that same philosophy in life. Anything that I'm not good at, I want to get better at. And I take that same kind of motivation. What do I need to do? Who do I need to talk to? How do I need to be to get to this particular level I'm trying to get at? And so I think mistakes are good. They keep you humble. They keep you humble and hustling and striving towards perfection. And that's, you know, that's what I've been doing every day. Every day I want to be better. Every year I want to be better. One of the things I think I mentioned, my daughter always asked me, like, Dad, you're getting older. I'm like, nope, I'm getting better. And she sees me and she was like, you know what? You don't age. Maybe you're right. You don't age. It's like you look the same way I remember you looking when I was a little girl. And so she's kind of incorporating, you know, that some of the stuff that I'm doing to try to be better every day, to try to communicate better every day, to try to do things better every day, that keeps you young, that keeps you in the game, that keeps you humble, and that keeps you striving for perfection.
Accepting your shortcomings, Mr. Charles, and understanding that they don't define you. They don't live with you, bro. Your reaction.
Oh, no doubt. But I think it's important. That helps you understand who you are as a person, right? I think that was the key. Y'all don't do certain things. And Mark, you and I both know, and DeMaurice, from the standpoint of being in that area of communication / marketing or, you know, whatever, in the production, entertainment, all that, there's always going to be somebody better than you. And one thing that I struggled with for a while was when things changed over into this, when this IT explosion happened in our focus with marketing and stuff, and social media became a major player. And as one of the old dinosaurs, the old soldiers, when you used to be a newspaper reporter or something like that, or TV reporter, the roles were always defined. And now with these young people coming in, everything is social media related. Well, you got to make videos. You got to know how to do TikTok. You got to know how to take a photo. You just have to have more of a diverse skill set. I didn't have that at my previous jobs. And then unfortunately, when I was removed from my situation at my major job, I was forced to dive in or drown. And when I first started out, it was like, man, this is crazy. I don't know what's going on. And then over time, the explosion took place. So I knew my shortcoming. I should have worked on it 10, 15 years ago because I knew it was coming. There was going to be a change. But instead, I just kind of went about my business. But when I did dive in, the one thing I love about it now is I get older, as DeMaurice said, you get better, is I found something that I had lost a long time ago. And I think I had a mental block because I was getting in the way, as you said. But I found my creativity again, man. And I'm like, oh, my God, that is the most dangerous thing the world is ever about to see right now. I found my creativity, allowed me to be creative, and now I feel good about it again. Man, I'm about to start blowing everybody away. Bah, 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 bah. How many more I got knocked down before I get to where I need to be? And there's something about it as you get older, when you find, they say, your mojo again. I said, wait. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You cannot let it define you. You have to address it. You have to understand your shortcomings. But you also can build up on it to make it something where you use to make a develop a strength instead of a weakness.
Yeah, mentally you can't basically harbor on past mistakes, man. And some cats do. You know, they kind of basically let it just sing there and they kind of keep talking about it and keep bringing it up and blah, blah, blah. You know, learn from it, you know, squeeze out of it what you need to squeeze and get from it. And try to do better the next time around. You can't go back and change it. You know, there's nothing in the past that we can go back and rewrite. I can't rewind back and do it all over again, but we can prosper from it. That we can. I want to come back here with this, Mr. Charles, because, you know, this is one that, to me, I think cuts to the core just a little bit more because, you know, we've all experienced hurt in our life in one form or fashion. And even with accepting the shortcomings, you know, sometimes we choose maybe not to accept them because, you know, we don't want to see us for truly who we are. But acknowledging, you know, that you were hurt and looking at that hurt and that pain and realizing it and basically working your way through it is a way of replenishing your self-esteem. But the first part starts with acknowledging the fact that, okay, yeah, I was hurt by that. Instead of acting like it's no big deal, no, that basically was inside and caused some pain. So that's something I'm going to bring to you in a sense, And that may not always be easy, because for men, you know, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to think anything that can really hurt us or get inside and kind of do some damage, but it happens. It's a fact of life. It's a way of life. So acknowledging what may have hurt you and then realizing you had to work your way through it. Your response, sir?
No, I agree with that 100%, but we are, as men, most men are very proud. And we're strong. That's what we're taught. Most of us have been taught that way. But sometimes, as I said, you have to come to the point where you got to realize something really bothers you or hurts you or somebody hurts you, whatever. And you got to come to the point where it's at, deal with it, and then give yourself time to heal. That's the other part, too. You know, you can get mad. You can be angry for a long time. But at some point, you have to come to grips with it, and you have to allow yourself to heal, because in that way, you can evolve. But you want to hear me coming out talking about that in a public forum at some meeting. You won't see that unless you come down to the new Underground Railroad. People know what I'm talking about that has been there. You got to come down to the Underground Railroad, because you might just see me on the track by myself. You will not see people around, but we'll get to the business of the meeting and handle it, as you said, dealing with it, coming to a point of healing, and then moving forward.
Mr. DeMaurice, basically acknowledging the hurt, it kind of starts there. And kind of, but a lot of things in life, you must acknowledge first where you are to be able to move on from there. Not sometimes you can stay stuck there, but acknowledging the hurt and then realizing that you must work your way through it.
Yeah, I might have said this before, so excuse me if I'm repeating it. I remember when my divorce was final. And there were women who knew what I was going through, and they wanted to start up relationships right away with me. And I would tell them, like, no, you know, I don't think that's a good idea for me, because, you know, I want to get some time to I wasn't hurt because my heart was broken. I was hurt because for me, I felt like I made a mistake of agreeing to get married and going through that for 6 years. Instead of listening to my first mind and saying, this is not what I should be doing. So I was blaming me. And I really had to take time to realize that how I'm going to make decisions for my life from this point on. And so I wanted to be very careful about doing that. And I felt like if I got into another relationship really early, that I wouldn't have allowed myself, just like Mr. Charles said, to heal first and then, you know, look at my position, look at where I am, who I am, where I wanted to go, what I'm looking for, and then proceeding from there. So I think a lot of people don't really take the time to heal when they get hurt. Like, you admit, men don't like to admit when they're hurt, you know. In any certain circumstance, you get hurt and you go, you know, you say, you good? You good? I'm all right. I'm all right. I mean, you just keep going. And you know you really hurt. You need to sit down. You need to take a time out. So I think we need to, as men, get rid of that pride. When you're hurting, say, I'm hurt and I need a moment. I need a moment, and I need to take time to recuperate and take that time, man. Get away from people who might, you know, try to instigate you into certain other things, other certain situations. So I remember doing that to a lot of women who knew me. And I'm like, you know what, I'm not the same person that you knew before this experience. So if you're looking for that person's gone. But I need time to really kind of get back to me before I can indulge in this, because what I may do is lash out on you or treat you badly because I'm still you know, the wounds are still fresh from this experience I just came from. So give me some time to let my wounds heal. And if you're still around, then we can play. If you're not, then I can move on. You can move on. But I don't want to put you in a situation and put me in a situation where I'm not healing. I'm inflicting pain. And because I just came out of a horrific experience in a relationship that I knew I shouldn't have been in. So I don't want to engage in that. So healing, I think, like Mr. Charles put it, is probably the best way you can deal with hurt and admitting that you're hurt and that you need some time to recover.
Yeah, I'm going to say something. It may not sound nice, bro, but I kind of experienced that what you talked about, them being there ready to kind of come in, kind of like vultures, bro. In a sense, because they realize you're coming out of a marriage, they want to kind of, before you start to think too straight, man, they wanted to capitalize on you. So that was part of that, too. before you get to thinking right, man, they wanted to kind of. I'm here to tell you, my brother. I'm here to tell you. You know, you're staggered, you're wounded, you're bleeding. I'm here to patch you up.
You're on the rope.
Yeah, you're on the rope. Now there's a sense of, you feel a sense of obligation because they, you know, they took care of you, man. They brought you back to health, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And that's what some of that was. I mean, realistically, that's what it came down to. I want to come back to you, Mr. Demetrius, with this one. In a sense where, when I spoke earlier, we're going to spend some time at some point discussing the low self-esteem of men. But this is something that I think that, you know, I think we have all probably have felt this and at a time, and it may have rocked our esteem to an extent, because a lot of times, you know, when our pockets are low, you know, there's things you may, you know, you see, and I swear, the best time to see something you want is when you ain't got no money. When you ain't got no money, and everything looks good to you. We don't have no money. It just does, man. The cars look better. I mean, it just, everything looks good to you. But that material wealth, if you're not careful, man, can basically bother you to where it basically drags down your esteem. And a lot of people that have the money to do so, they make it part of their esteem to make sure they go out and do all that because they're trying to make themselves feel good. But when you're in the less part of that, and it's, you don't have that, you know, you can't, at this point, have the rib steak. You have to settle for XYZ. You have to do this. It kind of like, you know, kind of, it does a number, or it can do a number on your self-esteem. Your reaction to that, sir?
Yeah, man, I had a coworker, Dr. Poindexter, who he used to put, like, you know, a little bit of change and a few dollars in his son's pocket. And the old folks used to say, so, you know, if you got a little change in your pocket, it keeps the hanks off of you. And I remember this reverend, because Dr. Poindexter was a minister, but I remember this reverend, I was doing this research project in the west side of Chicago with a group from Rush Hospital. And he used to have these meetings every Friday for these men out of the neighborhood. And they would come there and sit there and they would talk about different issues, which I thought was great. And then one Friday I was able to sit in. And then afterwards, he would give them all $10. And that wasn't really why they were coming, but he felt the need to give them $10. And I remember sitting down talking to him, like, why do you give them like $10 after the meeting? Is that, you know, are they just sitting there for the money? He said, you know, he said, maybe some of them are sitting there for the $10. He said, man feels different when he got money in his pocket. And he can buy him, you know, something to eat or he can buy him something to drink. And he said, I want them to, you know, if they don't get any kind of money or if they're not working on that and they got that $10 in their pocket, you know, I want them to feel good that they could, you know, buy their kids some candy or something like that. Do something to feel like, you know, they're part of a man. And I think that's kind of getting ingrained in us through society that we have to be the providers, that we are the providers, that we need to have something. And sometimes we neglect that we do have something that's outside of money. We have our knowledge. We have our wisdom. We have our words. We have words of encouragement. We have words of love and all that other stuff that we can bring to the table to help people out. But I have to admit, sometimes, you know, when the money's running low and it's you know, a few days from payday and you know, you can't go out there, you know, just order food that you want and all that stuff and do what you want. You kind of feel a little, you know, that low self-esteem. But what I learned to do over the years is realize that without the money, if we didn't operate on the money, you know, be grateful for what you have. Be grateful of that you have life, that you can breathe, that you have shelter over your head, that you have food to eat. You don't have to go to all the fancy restaurants and all that stuff. You have clothes, all that stuff. So sometimes I think we're not grateful for what we have. And
and we kind of lose sight that we have to have what everybody else has or what we see on TV, and everybody's kind of living that life. But what I also learned with that process is that what people flash and dash, they probably don't have. Because if you have it, then why do you need to kind of tell everybody you have it and show everybody you have it? It's almost like you trying to gain some self-esteem of how people think of you when you have certain things or you can afford certain things. But you have some of the richest people who are just tortured, and some of the poorest people who have peace of mind and they can sleep at night. And so which would you rather have?
There it is. Mr. Charles, allowing the lack of wealth, material wealth, I would say, to kind of play with our self-esteem, your reaction?
Oh, yeah, it's easy to do because it's like anything else. Certain people have certain things that you want to be, for the most part, we've been taught to want to be included with those groups of people and be able to hang with them. So you see your fella, like DeMarie's driving a nice car, you want to drive a nice car too, you want to hang out with him. Sit up there, drink cognac, smoke cigars. You want to be part of that company too. But if you can't do that, then you gotta wait your time, bro. You know what I mean? You gotta pull back and I catch you on the next one. But honestly, you just have to realize that there's more to life than that. And I mean, think about it. When you're even dating a woman, right? You want to take her out. You want to take her in a presentable car. And you want to be able to take her out to a nice dinner. And if you can't afford to do that, you go, man, I got to wait till things change. And that can affect your self-esteem. But I think you really have to be honest with yourself and say, hey, it might just be I might be in a rut right now. I might be in a place that I don't want to be. But that does not take away from who I am. I'm still a good person. I'm still doing well. And a real woman or whoever would really see me for who I am. We all have setbacks. But I've never been a big materialistic person anyway. Like with cars, DeMarie and I talked about this in my book. It's a chapter called Hoopty, man. I'm so used to driving Hoopties, man, that if something's wrong, if there's nothing wrong with a car, I think something's wrong with me. I'm used to having to tinker. That's all I was taught. And cars never really, there's nothing to about a vehicle for me. As long as it runs, take me where I need to go. As far as the prettiness and all, it's really a luxury vehicle. That'll be good with me for about 6 months, and then I'll be ready to get rid of it. So the self-esteem has to come back to the point should not be based on the materialistic things that you have, but who you are really deep as a person. And realizing, too, last but not least, that this setback or this low self-esteem based on materialistic things is only going to last a little bit, maybe only a day, because tomorrow's another opportunity, bro.
What Black Men Talk. We're up to the part of the episode where we find out what these two gentlemen have been thinking for the past week, something they want to kind of put out to us that they want us to kind of respond to. Mr. Charles, your question first, sir.
Yeah. I mean, a lot has been going on with this pandemic and things, and we talked about recently about where we're going with this world. We've seen wars and stuff like taking place. But as a culture, how do you feel about the future of this world, I mean, particularly with our young people? I mean, are you encouraged by it? Are you discouraged by it? What do you think about that?
A combination of things, realistically. Encouraged to an extent. There's some disappointment, discouragement that goes in it as well. But I think whenever I take time to focus on something of this nature, I go to and I think back to our ancestors, what they had to go through. And through all that, man, God made a way for us as people, bro. But I can't believe, and I won't even think to believe, that what we may not be able to see for the future of our people and what the future may hold, he has a craft and he has a plan. So it's not for me to think about to really consider and harp on, because he's in control. And if he brought us through all those years of slavery, he brought us to this, he brought us to that, and he brought us to a point where, you know, where we are now, and if we're able to join the luxury that we enjoy of this life, the gift we're able to enjoy, yeah, he's going to do even better for us in the future. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
I know it's easy to get caught up in, like, you watching TV and the news and you hearing all the things that are happening, especially with our young people in our community. You hear about wars and all this other stuff. And just a quick note on that. I live on the border of a community called Ukraine Village, and the other side is Humble Park, where most of the Puerto Rican folks in this city live. And it's just heartbreaking to watch it, because I know some of the Ukrainian people, and to see them being encouraged, praying for their loved ones and all that other stuff, is something that you see kind of different from on TV. But we can easily get caught up with, like, especially our young people, that they're into crime and gangs and all that stuff, man. But, you know, I challenge everybody, especially in the black community, go out there and meet up with some of these young people, and you'll find that you'll meet a lot of young, amazing young people who just need guidance, or they're trying to strive to be better. They don't want to live in some of the conditions they're in, but they're looking for resources and words of encouragement and a smile and a pat on the back saying, if you need me, call me, you know where to find me. And so that encourages me a lot, you know, and that's why I wanted to go on that recruiting trip. And I'm going to try to set up some more recruiting trips. We're going to take a bus ride all across South Side and West Side of Chicago, just to meet these folks and let them know that there is a bomb in Gilead, and that you can do what we're doing, and you can do things better than we're doing. You can aspire to be better and greater than all of us. And so when you see that, you get encouraged. I know I do, because I see those bright eyes, and I see they remind me of when, you know, I was that age, like, okay, what's the future hold? What am I going to be doing? You know, what can I do? What can I get into? What do I like? And finding out that stuff and know that there were people who were encouraging you to get to that point. You have to be encouraged by seeing that. And it's not even like a force. You want to help them get there. You know that you have the answers. You have some of the things that they need to help them get to where they want to be. And it would be really bad of you to hold that back from them and just let them kind of just struggle through that without giving them some words of encouragement. So I'm encouraged by some of the younger people. Get away from TV, just meet people face-to-face and talk to them and find out their concerns and find out their worries and all the other stuff. And you'll be amazed at what they're thinking, their perspective, how you can help and shape and change that perspective. And I'm encouraging some of the folks in the future that we're going to be all right. We are going to be all right.
Good stuff right there, Mr. Charles. Great question, man. Your response.
Yeah, no doubt. Appreciate it. I have my moments from time to time. I'm like, man, does anybody even give a damn what's going to happen? Is anybody really paying attention? And then every once in a while, I run into a young person that just gives me, as Dina Lee said, he's not people, but I'm running into a young person that gives me just absolute joy and gives me instills the belief that things are going to be okay. My nephew did that for me the other day. We were talking about something. He's a sophomore in high school, and he's so creative and different and ahead of his time that some of the conversations we have, he just kind of blows my mind. So he said he was writing a poem for something, and he wrote a poem, and he gave it to me. And after I read it, I was like, I got to make sure that I put him in position so he can make sure that he knows he's a leader. Because if he keeps doing what he's doing, it's going to be all right. Along with some other like minds, and the fact that he's thinking like that already, I'm like, yeah, it's going to be all right. So, and I see other examples where you see these young people coming together, and with the whole Black Lives Matter particularly where different races and different people of different backgrounds came together and they stood together, something that some of our us and our generation would never have done. We talked about it, but we wouldn't have done it. They went down, they did it. That's very encouraging to me as well.
It's good that we all can see signs knowing that the future is going to be good. Yeah, it's easy to kind of latch on to some things that can detract from it and make you, you know, kind of see it in a pessimistic view. But it's good to see. Mr. DeMaurice, your questions, sir.
Yeah, I'm going to respond to a little bit what we talked about last thing, the last topic. One of the things I always think about sometimes, and I get in my own head, like, man, screw this. I'm going to leave this. I'm going to do something else. I can be making much more money and all that stuff. And one of the things that one of the young ladies said Friday, we were sitting around table, we must spend like 3 hours with them. And we were doing all this talking, going back and forth and all that. And she said, you know, all the times I've been, I got to get out of here, man, do all this stuff. She said, a couple of them said, are you going to be there? Can we have contact with you? Because we like talking to you and, you know, you're so helpful and all that stuff. And I'm like, damn, I can't go. I can't go. Because I'm asking the creator, like, you know, put me in a place, you know, you know I'm tired of all this. And then I hear them. And it's like, you get that tug in your heart, like, man, you can't go. Because you're still needed. But anywho, here's what I want to find out. Because I was over at Buddy's house, and this is not the first time I've seen a buddy do this. But what happens to a man when he gets married, where he can no longer, he gets to a point where he can no longer find his shoes? I know it's a metaphor, but I want you to take it where he can't find his shoes, and he needs his wife to find his shoes. Now, before he got married, he knew where his shoes were and all this other stuff. But what happens to a man when he gets to a point after he's married, he can't find his shoes? What's going on? What do you think's going on?
I'm not sure if I see the metaphor here, but I will say this. I want to say this real quick. What you were saying, man, we all are put in places for a reason in a period of time. And sometimes when we're there, we don't understand the reason and we question why. And it may take a while to understand it, and I'm glad you kind of they came to you quickly. But we're all given gifts and talents, and we're put in places, I truly believe, for specific reasons, for periods of time. And it's usually when those times when we're feeling like, why am I doing that? And it's like that we're thinking, it's because we're there, we just haven't figured it out yet, and it comes. But back to the man that lost his shoe, the only thing I can kind of come up with that was, what is that in a sense where I think it's sometimes tough to be in a relationship or marriage and maintain who you are. And then sometimes you allow people to basically, you lean on people sometimes to do some things that you should be doing for yourself. And then sometimes people allow that and they like that because they want to have a sense of, you know, you need me, in a sense of control to an extent. And, you know, I was raised, And you know, it's funny because my mother never really said this. My mother always kind of said, you know, help out her, whoever she may be, help her out, support her, X, Y, Z. But I took that, and I believed that, and I expanded on it to say, I'm going to do that. But I'm going to make sure that I know I never have to be reliant on that person, whoever she might be. I want to be able to do those things for myself, no matter what it is. You know, I shouldn't have to look at someone prepare a meal for me to eat. That's nourishing my body. I just have to look at someone to be able to wash and do things that I should be doing for myself. And I think sometimes as men, when we coincide, we relax and we pull back. And some of us never knew, let's just be honest. But we relax, we pull back, and we allow the others to start to take, and we get comfortable. And let's just say for some reason that other is no longer there. You lost yourself. Your response, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I think it's easy to fall into, I wouldn't call it a trap, but it's easy to release and let go because the person that, as you said, they can't find their shoes, they have become dependent on the individual. And oftentimes that's because of the relationship has been like that for so long. And it's like, you know what, the decisions that I make or decisions that we make, it's together. and now something that you normally would do for yourself or think about yourself or make a decision on yourself, you allow others to do for you. And it's easy to become complacent in that, and that becomes your way of life until something, unfortunately, sometimes something goes horribly wrong, and you go, I'll be damned. What the hell was I? It takes an I'll be damned moment. Sometimes mm-hmm. you never have them, and you just go on, never happily ever after. But that's, sometimes you have that, be damned, what the was I thinking? But sometimes that's how it is until, you know, like you said, if something never happens, then that, you always need that woman to find your shoes. Something crazy, though, you be like, I can't find much. I knew it. She probably put them outside. I mean, then at that point you realize you have to find it. She's no longer there to help you with the shoes.
Yeah, it's a shoe today. It's your money tomorrow, Mr. DeMarie.
Because I met a lot of brothers, some of them in the Army. And so one time I was over at my buddy's house, and him trying to find his shoes turned into an argument. And it was like, that wasn't the first time, second time, where you should put your shoes, such and such and such. And so I said, you know, I'm going to wait in the car. And I waited in the car, and he got in the car, and I just looked at him. He was like, what? I was like, you were in the Army. Could you always find your shoes in the Army? He said, yeah. I was like, you were in this place. Could you always find your shoes here? And so yeah, he was like, yeah. I said, what's happening here? Either you're losing your mind or she's hiding your shoes. I was like, you should never be that dependent on somebody else on with your stuff. It's like, I know when you get married, you share a lot of stuff, but you should know, you shouldn't lose yourself in this marriage to a point where you're kind of depending on like some kind of like frivolous things over shoes, and then it turns into an argument about, you know, you should put your shoes, ain't nobody touch your shoes, all this other stuff. And I was like, and that, to me, I said, that causes a lot of stress. Because now you're asking the other person to think for you, and that's really not going to grow the relationship. And he sat there, we talked about it for a while, and he said, you know, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And we were driving along, getting to where we needed to go. But I'm like, don't get to the point where you lose yourself so much in the relationship, because the person fell in love because you were you. But when you start becoming something else and becoming dependent and losing yourself and not being you, I said, that's when you lose the relationship. That's when you have these little arguments and all this other stuff. So, brothers, you know, make sure you know where your shoes are.
Oh, you have another question, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, I guess my question is that I want to know now is, how, as a man, where we're at right now, as a man, have you surprised yourself, or let's just say, have you consider that you have outdone yourself in regards to your life? I mean, have you reached some things that you never thought you would, or you feel like you're right on point what you thought you'd always be doing, just in general, as far as your accomplishments are concerned in life?
I am somewhat surprised that I am who I am in life, but I'm thrilled that I knew I had to change some things in my life early on to kind of get here, and I'm glad I made those changes to get here. And what tends to excite me and amaze me is that the things I'm looking forward to doing, I thought I've been doing maybe younger in my life, or I could have been doing younger in my life, but they're in front of me now, and there's so much excitement and energy to do it that I find to be amazing. Because I would have thought, if you'd asked me 10, 20 years ago, and you'd have said, you know, approaching 60, would I want to be doing X, Y, Z? I would have thought the energy wouldn't be there. Maybe the thought to want to, the to execute, and it's like, it's an abundant. So really for me, it's like, and I'm not trying to, you know, blow my horn, but I look at some cats 10, 20 years younger than me, man, and it's like their energy level is not even close. And that's sad. So no, I'm thankful that, yeah, I feel good about where I am, what's in front of me, you know, what's to come. And yeah, I'm glad that there's some things that I kind of put in line a while ago
that's paid off in dividends and showed itself up appropriately. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
I'm kind of surprised and then not where I am and how I got here because when I look back at some of the things that I was doing in my life, I'm like, you know, why am I doing this? Why am I in this experience? Why am I, given this assignment, doing that? And then you realize when you think back that all that stuff is preparing you for what you're doing right now or speaking words of encouragement to somebody that you have, in front of you, and you realize that a lot of the stuff that you probably go through and have gone through and you have experienced was not only for you, but the people around you to help them, through a tough situation. I was talking to a student who was having a difficult time Friday, and we talked for about 20 minutes, and she wanted to talk to me about, about leaving school. And, I was like, I'm overwhelmed. There's a lot of things happening in my life, separation, all this other stuff happening. And I shared something with her that just came out of my heart. I'm like, I can't decide what you're going to do. I said, I hear what you're going through. And I said, I will work with you, if you need extensions and things of that sort. I said, but I've seen this before. And I said, my grandmother used to say all the time that the devil is most busy when you're close to your breakthrough. And I said, you're really close to graduating. You are really close. If you can find some resources or kind of change some things or do some things to sacrifice the next year, I said, you'll be right where you need to be. And I said, and anything I can do to help you outside of just giving you a grade, I said, you're going to have to work, but I can't just give you a grade. But if you need extra time, if, you're going through some things and you need, extra time in assignment or, just some things to help you through, I would do that. And I said, talk to the other instructors, because I'm pretty sure that if you say that I'm agreeing to do that, they will be forced to do the same thing, because this is not the first time we've done it. So you realize that things that you go through in your life is just not for you. And there's a bigger picture. There's a bigger there's a bigger purpose than just you. And I know, like, I'm surprised sometimes, and I'm not surprised. And I'm nowhere near perfect, and nowhere near where I feel like I want to be. But to be able to be in a position to help people and to advocate for people and to be there as a comfort. And Mark, you talked about this too in the situation we talked about not too long ago about you interceding, and it wasn't for you, people wouldn't come together. And so I think we all have that, and we learn from our experiences through our families, through our past relationships, things of that sort, and we're able to offer things to folks that put us in a position where I truly think when you do that, somehow, some way, you get blessed by doing that. I don't think it just goes
absolutely
like. Yeah, I don't think it just goes like in the universe and nothing comes back to you. So I don't do it for that, but I know that things that come to me later in life, and it's like you're being blessed. It's like, man, okay, this is really good. I'm, this is something I asked for. And maybe, just maybe, it's set that once you give it, you get it. Maybe that, I know I ain't original in that thought. Maybe when you give, you get back what you your heart desires and what you want.
Mr. Charles, we got about a minute, bro, so if you don't mind, keep that in mind. Your response, sir?
Yeah, no, I just think that for myself, it's crazy. So I think I've overachieved a lot. My main thing is I never thought I would be able to reach some of the goals my dad had set for me. But I think I've overachieved, and I always wondered if you would be happy about it, and I think you would, because oftentimes I've actually surprised myself, and that's a great thing.
Yeah. Hey, man, you two gentlemen never cease to amaze me. You continue to bring it and bring it strong. We continue to do so. We'll be doing some different type of things. Hopefully get Mr. DeMaurice pops up here at some point. I got some other people that's going to pop on and get back to you up from the ashes. But in the meantime, we're going to stay black. We want to stay strong. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. Appreciate you giving us a listen. This is myself, Mark Elliott, Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles. Y'all have a good week.